do it in the Senate. We will call the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability to order. Will you please call the roll?
Senator Althoff.
Here.
Representative Burke.
Here.
Representative Davidsmeyer.
Here.
Senator Kaler.
Here.
Representative Moffitt.
Here.
Representative Nekritz. Representative Riley, Senator Rose,
yes.
Senator Staines,
yes,
Senator Severson, Senator Trotter,
here.
Representative Yunus.
Here.
We have 10 in attendance.
10 being present, we have a quorum. Welcome everyone to the Commission on Governmental Forecasting and Accountability for this date. Today we'll... Oh, sorry about that. There you go. Well, we don't have cheap microphones on the Senate side. but I guess it's budget cuts. So we have right now, I understand we have two new members with us today, Senator Pam Althoff and Representative C.D. Davidsmeyer. Right. Well, welcome to COGFUN. Hopefully you learn something that you can use as we go forward. We have a lot of respect. It's going to be a short agenda today. We're going to hear the economic forecast and revenue estimates for FY 2017 and for FY 2016's revenue updates. And we have Ed Boss Jr., who is our chief economist, and Jim Muschinski, our revenue manager. So welcome both of you guys, and if you want to proceed, the floor is yours.
Thank you. You've each received a packet, and in this packet, the very first colorful set of charts is what I'm going to be presenting today. In addition to that, we have Global Insight, which is one of the services that both we and the Bureau of the Budget use their latest forecast on Illinois. And finally, every year the Commission gets a complete independent view from Moody's Analytics. And that is on our website, and we also gave you a hard copy, which will be in the mail soon. But time being short, let's go through some of our forecasts of the economy. To start out with, the first chart just shows a change in real gross domestic product, the best measure they have of measuring economic activity. And as you can see, once we got out of the recession in the middle of 2009, the economy has been moving up, but in a very erratic pattern. Actually, there tends to be weak sections and stronger sections, so that when you look at it on a fiscal year basis, it looks like it's going all over. But if you look at it averaged out over the year, we've basically been in a 2 to 2.5% growth range over the recovery period, which is the slowest recovery we've had since the end of World War II. Now, why is that? The next chart shows that if you're going to look at the economy as a whole, you got to look at the consumer. It accounts for 70% of the total spending anyway. And there you can see while it's been rising, it's been kind of disappointing as far as growth goes. Now, you might have seen the other day that they revised up the last quarter from 0.7% growth to 1% growth, which is miserable. But it wasn't because of the consumer. The consumer sector actually was weaker than it was in the 0.7% growth. So we're still, the consumer's in a better financial position, but they're not spending. They're saving, et cetera. Now, you say that may seem strange because we have strong housing, strong autos, et cetera, but other sectors of the economy have not done as much as they have earlier, adding to it. And one of them, of course, is the business sector itself. So chart 3 shows the Purchasing Managers Index for Chicago and the United States. basically the way to read this. If it's 50 or above, they consider it's expanding. If it's below 50, it's actually contracting in that sector of the economy, the manufacturing sector. Now, yesterday, Chicago's came out, and we've had three consecutive months of the national one contracting. Chicago looked like it was rising, but then the figure came out, and it's back down and contracting again. So that's a little hard one to read, but it's a weakening in the manufacturing sector. So you turn to the non-manufacturing sector. Of course, as the economy has grown over the years, we've become more and more dependent on services rather than just manufacturing. But even that, in the last 3 or 4 months, we've seen weakening somewhat. So you've got weakening manufacturing jobs, you've got a slowdown in service sectors, and a mediocre consumer sector. Another sector which had gone very well as we got out of the recession at the middle of 2009 is net exports. Now, Illinois is the fifth largest exporter, so it's, while it's a small part of overall growth, it's relatively important for us. And you can see there that we've been on a declining trend after doing very well early on in the economic expansion. What does this mean for jobs? The next chart shows United States employment, and you can see that both surveys, the household survey, which is actually a survey of individuals, and the establishment survey, where they actually look at payrolls from companies, they tend to run fairly synonymous as far as trend goes, and that now we're at a level where we've surpassed where we were at the previous peak. So that's when the business cycle goes from recovery into actual expansion. So in 5 years after 2009, we now have surpassed and are in expansion phase. Well, how does Illinois compare? The next chart shows we also have improved our employment picture. However, unlike the nation, we have not recovered all the jobs lost in the previous recession. In fact, we hadn't even recovered that when the recession began. So we had a lot to make up for, even though we're improving. The job growth is still fairly unrepresentative of what we've seen in the past. And part of it on the next chart is in the manufacturing sector. Illinois lost 14,000 manufacturing jobs in 2015. And it's reached its lowest level now of manufacturing employment since 2010. We didn't get the same benefit as the Midwest did initially from the oil exploration and all that kind of stuff. So they were actually, even Michigan and states like that, were doing much better in the manufacturing sector than we were. We were still losing jobs, and the trend doesn't look very encouraging if you look at the last several months. If you look at unemployment rates, you can see that both Illinois and the nation have come down. Up until the last couple of months, we were getting closer and closer to U.S. rates when all of a sudden we've turned around. Some of them are calling it that we hit a U-shape. We've gone up in the last few months. We fell to 5.4% in September and October, and the rate rose to 5.7 in November and jumped further to 5.9 in December, even as we don't have the January rate yet because they do some benchmarking, so it won't be out for another week or so. But so we're at 5.9 and the nation's at 4.9 right now, so we got a 1% gap. On the next chart, we look at two different measures of unemployment. One is the series, which is the percent of the labor force that was shown on the previous chart. The other is what they call their U6 rate, and it incorporates part-time workers that are part-time only because of economic reasons, and they're still looking for jobs, et cetera. So it's a higher rate. That's at 9.9%, and it's been that way for the last 2-3 months. Another way on chart 10 is to compare the unemployment rates, and you can see that in 2007, there was very little difference between the U.S., the Midwest, and Illinois. However, by about 2011, the gap between Illinois and the other two measures increased very sharply. It started to come down in 2014, but in 2015, and the latest, it looks like that gap is widening again. So if you put all this together, what do we expect for the outlook for this fiscal year and next? Our economic service Global Insight gives you three alternatives. One is that the economy continues to chug along at a moderate pace, which is what they call their baseline. They give odds of 65% chance this is going to occur. They have an optimistic scenario where we pick up steam in the U.S. economy. They don't give that much of a chance, 15%. And they have a 1 in 5 chance or 20% chance in what they call their pessimistic solution. Now, to get a little psychology behind that, I noticed this month for the first time they no longer call it pessimistic. They haven't changed their numbers, but they now call it a mild recession scenario with the same numbers. So psychologically, I think this shows you where they're leading. The next chart shows, as I mentioned earlier when we started, that when you look on a fiscal year basis, you get kind of funny numbers. And so you'll see here that on a fiscal year basis for the economy as a whole, fiscal 13 and 14 look like they're very, very weak. And then we jump up in 2015, back down, and then back up. And then, again, it depends where the growth in the quarters come. Like I said, it's throughout this period, it's been 2 to 2.5. In fact, if you consider that they don't revise, which they will have one more revision in the fourth quarter of last year's data for the nation, the growth rate would have been 1.89%, which is a little below the 2 to 2.5% rate we had been seeing. The final chart just looks at Illinois' forecast, and particularly, you might note that while we continue to see some improvement at the national level, if you look at the unemployment rate, they see basically no improvement there, stuck at 5.6% both this year and next year, fiscal years, and slower growth than the nation as well. And while some of the numbers may differ in the other forecasts we have here, both of them paint a fairly pessimistic view of the nation economy as well as in the state of Illinois.
Moving along then to the revenue portion of the handout. Page 17 shows on a month-by-month basis how revenues have performed relative to the same month a year earlier. And you can see here, we've lost revenue each and every month. Now, don't be alarmed by that because that was forecasted. We knew that we were comparing against the same period of last year with the higher income tax rate. So that in and of itself is not that alarming. However, as shown on page 18, some of the revenue sources have shown some variance from forecast. Personal income tax, and I'll get into this in a little bit, actually is doing pretty well despite being down 16%. Again, we were comparing the lower rate versus the higher rate. Corporate, however, has underperformed somewhat, down 27%. But in our opinion, it's the sales tax number that is the most concerning. We're essentially flat through the first 7 months, and looking at the preliminary data today, that continues into February. So that kind of reinforces what Ed had mentioned about the retraction of the consumer. And when the consumer starts to fade, bad things typically follow. Page 19, I'll get right to the revised forecast. In July of 15, right after the end of the fiscal year, we published our revised fiscal year 16 estimate. We took into account actuals from the prior fiscal year and any other changes that we were made aware of, and our forecast was $32.139 billion. Since that time, over the last 7 or 8 months, we've had a few pressures build, and it is now time to make an adjustment. I'll get into more specifics in a minute, but overall, the big three are being revised down $259 million. Personal income tax, again, has done pretty well, maybe even a little bit better than what we thought. However, we do see some risks there because it's possible that some of the taxpayers were slow to adjust their withholding as well as their estimated payments to reflect the higher rates or the lower rates. They may have been withholding and even sending in their estimated based on the higher. So that means coming up here in the final payment season of March and April, there may be a dramatic shift. In fact, our estimate has prepared for that shift as well as the fact that last year's finals were based on the higher rate, even though the tax rate change went into effect January 1st. That was all part of the calculation. So our final payment estimate, we're able to absorb about a 40% decline to hit our numbers. So we still feel pretty confident with our estimate. Corporate income tax, however, we're essentially in a corporate's profit recession right now and have been for probably over a year. There's very little reason to believe that that will turn around in the near future, and that's being revised down a net of $73 million. Sales tax, again, has retrenched. It's essentially flat. Little reason to expect much growth over the remainder of the fiscal year. That estimate is being revised down $230 million. All the other state sources, some are a little bit higher, some are a little bit lower. They net to upward pressure of about $6 million. Transfers in, we were able to transfer $77 million from the refund fund. That was not part of the initial expectation. At the end of this fiscal year, we'll probably wish we had that money because we'll probably have a owed backlog building at the several hundred million, the way it looks. And then federal sources, again, downward pressure on the estimate. One of the reasons is probably we just don't have a budget. Yes, we have court decrees and court orders, but we don't have a true appropriation level. So we're just kind of spending as we go. Remember last year, towards the end of the year, we had an infusion of about $1.3 billion in fund sweeps. So it will be very difficult to reach the same period of last year in terms of federal reimbursements in order to hit that earlier forecast. So we're adjusting that down. Again, in total, we're looking at a downward revision of $442 million for this year. Page 20 is essentially just a more detailed accounting of that revision. Just trying to think what areas I may have skipped over. Inheritance tax is being revised up $25 million. This is the second year of really good inheritance tax growth. It probably still stems from 3 years of good market activity from 2012 to 2014, where we grew about 60%. So the wealth factor probably contributes to this. Now that we're going into a more subdued market activity for both last year and this year so far, we'll probably see that tail off next year. Then as we go to page 21, we offer up a comparison between ourselves and GOMB based on the budget book that they put out a couple of weeks ago. A little table there in the upper left shows that in total, the estimates are very similar, only differing by $15 million, with COGPA being just slightly below. However, by line, you can see there are some significant differences, particularly in the estimates of personal income tax and sales tax in the right-hand side of the larger table there. Our personal income tax estimate is $529 million higher. Again, though, we feel pretty confident that our number will be reached. Their number still reflects their estimate of the same period last year, so it's about a year old. They indicated, too, their concern about final payments, but unless things fall apart so bad over the next final payment season, I still pretty confident that we'll hit our number there. Sales tax, again, we're a little bit lower. The activity just has not been there. Other transfers were a little bit lower. But the big difference is in federal sources where we're $450 million lower. GOMB continues to use the total spend and reimbursement outlook for their federal source number. And that just hasn't happened over the last few years. In particular, We're utilizing a Medicare offset methodology with the feds, whereby we don't actually spend the money we owe the feds for the Medicare premiums for Medicaid. Instead, they say, hey, Illinois, you owe us $500 million, but I tell you what we'll do. Instead of you cutting a check to us and us sending back the reimbursement, we'll just reduce the amount of award we give you based on your other Medicaid spending. So we don't actually spend the money, but we get less back in reimbursement. There's little reason to think that this will change in the near term, but yet their numbers still reflect the full spend and reimbursement methodology. The bottom line, from the budgetary standpoint, it is a wash. But since we're looking at it strictly from the revenue side of the ledger, there is an impact on federal sources. Page 22, now we get into fiscal year 17.
It's already out.
The forecast calls for growth of only $215 million, and the figure is $31.912 billion. I'll just go over some of the underlying growth rates assumed in the forecast for the larger economic sources. Personal income tax is estimated to grow about 2%. That subpar growth reflects continued weakness in jobs, wages, and the increased likelihood of a recessionary pressures. Then we have to go through some timing elements in the forecast. Even though the tax rate went down in January of 15, there's still some carryover from that transition period. When people filed extensions back in the spring of last year, those final payments didn't come in until August, September, October of this fiscal year. So we still have a little bit of that higher 5% personal in this fiscal year. Well, that does finally go away next year, but there is some timing elements there that actually on a year-over-year basis suppresses the numbers for 17. At the end of the day, we expect the net growth to be only $115 million for personal. Corporate growth is expected to be only 1.5%. That reflects what's been described as a corporate or as a profits recession, and it's in line with low profit expectations of our forecasting services. Again, we have to go through some of that timing aspect of it, as well as a slight increase in the assumed refund percentage. And when you calculate all of that, you're looking at an actual decline of $52 million. Sales tax is forecast to grow only 1.9% or $150 million. Modest growth reflects lower fuel prices that have not translated into consumer activity. You know, remember when motor fuel prices were $3, $4, the questions that we would get was, you know, what's the windfall? How much are we benefiting from this? Well, we really didn't, because just because motor fuel prices go up, the amount of money in your pocket doesn't change. You were just able to spend less on other taxable services, so we didn't really see a spike in receipts. Well, what's happened here is just because the gas prices have gone down, the consumer has yet to spend that additional money, or, as Ed had mentioned, they are increasing their savings or paying off debt. So we are seeing a real lessening of sales tax activity there, which is a concern. Page 23 gets into the more of the specifics of each line's estimate. Those things worth noting, I think, would be inheritance tax. We're anticipating a fall off, just getting back on trend. We were kind of overreaching there the last couple of years. I don't think that that will continue. The refund fund transfer certainly is not expected to recur. That's a loss of $77 million. And in terms of the federal source receipts, at this time, what we've elected to do is we start with the federal number that was put out by the governor's, by GOMB, and we've adjusted that down by $500 million, which is the value of that Medicare offset methodology that we're currently employing. So in terms of the fiscal year 17 estimate and how we compare with that of GOMB, on page 24, you'll see that the differences really are not that great. In fact, we stand at $19 million higher than GOMB. A little bit of difference in the big three, we're a little bit higher. All the other smaller miscellaneous sources were a little bit higher, $48 million. Transfers in were a little bit lower, $96 million, primarily because of the capital projects fund. We just don't think that that monies in that fund will be available to make the required statutory transfer next year. But, of course, worth noting here is in GOMB's forecast, they have what we would characterize as about $925 million in uncertain revenues. And a rack up of those would include that $500 million in federal reimbursements, $200 million from the assumed proceeds from the Thompson Center sale, $275 million from a one-time sweep of the Budget Stabilization Fund, which would not be repaid, and then a small change in the hotel distribution or in a small change in the hotel tax in terms of how it's distributed. We get about $50 million into GRF through the hotel tax, and they would they propose to change that so that money flows right to the tourism promotion funds. So it isn't that we're disagreeing with the value of these assumed additional revenues. It's just a matter of certainty whether they will or will not occur. Certainly, the federal reimbursements, based on how we're doing things currently, we would think would to be unlikely to hit their higher level. The others, quite honestly, would either require legislative action to enact, or in the case of the Thompson Center, it may be more too aggressive to assume it will happen in fiscal year 17. There are a lot of steps that would have to go through. Appraisal process, offering it to other state agencies or local governments. It just takes a long time to while through that process. Page 25, essentially.
Jim?
Yes?
Putting on it further. Senator Kaler, did you have a question before you got too far ahead of us?
I'm interested in your comments about the sales tax, and I continue to see just around more and more internet sales. Is there a way of tracking whether we're losing more sales tax because of that?
You know, the department has Department of Revenue did a study, and the amount of money that's lost to internet sales has been declining to the point now it's probably not much of an issue. Most places nowadays, you buy something over the internet and they put the right sales tax amount on there. Sometimes I question the local government sales tax, but they usually get the state sales tax in there. Now, there are some smaller vendors who still don't collect it. But by and large, the big guys, the Amazons of the world, they now do collect and remit it. So about 5 years ago, that was starting to be a concern. I think that shifted. I think the retailers are cooperating more with the states.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Can you please add Senator Severson and Representative Rowley to the roll call, please?
Just very quickly, I'm almost finished here. Page 26, we just kind of go through a little comparison between the underlying growth rates of COGFA's estimates of the larger economic sources, GOMB's estimates, and then what the five-year average has been. And you can see in each instance, both we and GOMB are lower than what the five-year average has been. I think it just indicates the weakening economy and the outlook as being fairly modest in terms of revenue growth. And then I also wanted to include kind of how we come up with our forecast. Ed had mentioned Global Insight, but we also have a couple of other econometric firms we utilize, Moody's, consultant Robert Dealey. Data sources we utilize come from the Comptroller's Office, actual receipt tracking, data collection from Department of Revenue, or tax collection from Department of Revenue, reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and IDES, and other pertinent data sources. Our forecast models range from those very simple to fairly complex. It all depends on the revenue sources we're estimating. Some are the more sophisticated econometric models for in the case of income taxes, and some are very simple and more along the lines of the time series valuation techniques. We have to go through a lot of adjustments. I don't think anybody understands the difficulty in some of the adjustments that we have to do. It's not just as easy as plugging in a tax rate. There's so many timing elements that that makes the challenge even more than just forecasting what a base rate would be. And then finally, before we present to you, we have to do kind of a little internal evaluation of the estimates and make sure they make sense to us before we try to have them make sense to you. So we continually go through a internal review process. So that's essentially the forecast and how it was developed. And if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Burke, and then Leader Nekritz.
Thanks so much. Going back to your sales tax discussion, is it your view that the same theory would hold true for why you haven't seen an uptick in spending from lower gas prices? Would that same hold true with the why you haven't seen an uptick in spending from the reduction of the income tax? You think people are using it to pay down debt or to save?
We don't know precisely what they're doing with that money,
right?
Except we know they're not spending at the levels that we had thought at one point in time. Now, in terms of motor fuel, over the last few years, we would get around $650 million or so from the sales tax on motor fuel. I think this year we're estimating about $450 million and about the same for next year with the suppressed levels. So you would hope that people would have been able to make up spending in other areas, but they haven't. Why haven't they? That's the question. Is it because, well, now I guess if you look at your investment income, you've had a pretty good tail off in the market thus far this fiscal year. You may not feel as good about going out and making a big purchase as you once did. Maybe your debt level had gotten to the point and you're going to use this money now to pay off debt or increase your savings. But at the end of the day, it doesn't appear that they're looking to actually spend that money.
Okay. So there's no tracking of where this money's going. You just know it's not showing up in the consumer spending cycle and generating sales tax.
Right. I mean, the components that we know are the motor fuel and then essentially everything else. And it's those everything else categories that are also being suppressed and are not responding to the lower price on motor fuel.
Okay. And then I know in the past couple years, in terms of the income tax, we've had the, quote, April surprise. For the past couple years, any indication that we'll be surprised yet again? You'd think we wouldn't be surprised anymore. But.
And if we're going to be surprised this month or this year, and this is where the estimates are positioned to accommodate it, the surprise would be on the downside. But that's all been factored in. We knew going into this year that final payments were going to reflect the lower income tax rate. Last year, those final payments reflected the higher income tax rate, even though the rate had changed in January. So we had factored in that drop-off. But in addition, because, and I mentioned this earlier, some people, I guess, appear to be slow to adjust their withholding tables, slow to adjust their estimated payments. People get lazy. They send in their estimated payments at the same rate they did the prior year because that's all they're required to do. And now when they do their finals, they may see that, hey, guess what? I get a refund. So that would put downward pressure. But we think we're positioned enough with that. We could decline 40% and still hit our forecast. So I hate to say there will be an April surprise, but to the extent there is one, I think we've kind of prepared for that.
Okay. And so the pattern that you're seeing with the consumer demand not increasing as people have had a little more household income because of the decrease in tax rate and spending less money on gas, is that unique to our position, or would you have expected based on other experiences in other parts of the country that money would have gone into the economy, or is it typical that the saving is what?
To be honest, I think it's a harbinger of what could come.
I mean, if you looked at on the retail sales, for example, if you look from January this year to last year, it's actually, and this is not adjusting for inflation.
Right.
Department store sales were 4.5% below January of last year. Christmas didn't turn out, and the holiday season didn't turn out quite as robust as some of the earlier forecasts were. I don't think the National Retail Federation has come out yet, but I'm convinced they're going to have a downward revision from what they originally had proposed. I think there's a lot of uncertainties in the world. Right. People are scared.
So, but what is what you're seeing then, that that's a national trend, or is that particular?
These are national figures. It's
those
like
figures,
Illinois.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Leader Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Mashinsky, I'm having trouble not being alarmed, as you asked in the first, and when we looked at the first chart. Mr. Boss, you noted an uptick in Illinois unemployment in the last little bit.
Last couple months, yeah.
Is there anything that we can attribute that to, or do you know what sectors that's occurring in?
Mainly, we continue to lose manufacturing. That's where the biggest weakness has been.
Okay.
But there is...
So the loss of thousands of jobs in the human service sector and the higher education sector are not part of that?
Yeah, there's a graph in the IHS thing here that shows the change in employment
by sector
in Illinois, but I can't find it right now. What's interesting, too, is on page, of which I really like the best part of this report, if you turn to page 7 for the calendar year 2015, it shows you every, by number of employees lost, every time there's a closure, layoff, moving, restructuring, sometimes there's a positive increase in jobs. But if you look down the list of jobs created or lost, there's very few pluses there.
Okay, great. I'll take a look at that. And then on the State of Illinois economic forecast that you put out, I noticed that that's prepared by Moody's Analytics and Economic and Consumer Credit Analytics. How are those organizations chosen to develop this forecast?
They're probably the best known. Moody's Analytics, Moody's, their chief economist is an advisor to Obama. Everybody uses Moody's. We have hands off on this. We let them look at it. We may have a question and say, well, how do you do that? But we don't try to influence them at all. There are some things in the report I personally would agree with. Some I
not so much.
But we hands off on it.
Okay. So would it be your best guesstimate that they don't really have a political agenda in developing this report? So no, they don't. So when they say things like Illinois' business climate outshines its regional rivals, but the state's shaky finances have some firms questioning whether they want to expend in this state, or things like the state's longer-term outlook is tarnished primarily by its budget woes and weak population trends, not its high costs relative to nearby states. Or I think there's one other that I find that runs sort of counter to a lot of the political narrative we hear around here, that the effects of right-to-work laws, it's less clear the effects that right-to-work laws have on economic growth. It's due to the fact that the unit strength is just one factor that businesses look at when deciding whether to set up shop or relocate. Energy and other costs also matter. Those kinds of things, you don't think that they have a political bias in saying those things?
They're not us.
Okay. Very good. I think that we all need to keep that in mind as we talk about what the causes and impacts are of various public policies that we're looking at. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Chairwoman Staines and then Representative Yunus.
Representative Nekritz basically was covering what I was hoping to cover as well, and really just the general sense on, it sort of connects to some of the sales tax, maybe people not spending as much. Would it be your view that the state of or lack of financial stability here is more driving some of the potential uncertainty here than anything else? I mean, it seems like the forecast that the Moody's Analytics folks did, that seems to be what they really point to as the underlying weakness in Illinois that's causing some of the issues, is the lack of fiscal strength of the state, the kind of fiscal situation that we are creating. Is that your assessment as well, based on what they have to say?
I would say it's got to be considered a factor. I don't know how much emphasis I'd put on it, though.
Are there other factors that you see playing a heavier role?
Well, you know, if you look at the out-migration, because we continue to lose population, it seems like the state is getting more and more centered around the Chicago area, which is doing quite well, and then there's the rest of Illinois, the manufacturing belt, which is very hard hit. We're coming out with a piece you'll probably get Wednesday or Thursday where I'm looking at this and how many jobs were lost, and the unemployment rate's 7.9% in certain areas of Illinois, the Rockford, the
yep.
Decatur. And so there's like two Illinois. You get a different perspective from where you are at the time. But when you start seeing people moving not only to Florida, not only to California, but they're moving to Indiana, that gives you an uneasy feeling too.
Right. People yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that was the other takeaway I had on there. It really does seem like there's two general economies. We've got Illinois and the Chicago region, which seems to be fairly strong, relatively speaking, and then the rest of the state where much weaker. But then underlying, it seems that the fiscal state of the state is really what's driving some of these factors, potentially, according to...
You come to Chicago guys. And, you know, there's a movement into the city of the young millennials and stuff, but they're all renting. Nobody wants to buy. I know I finance head of our condo board, and we have a limit of 10% or 10 units that can be rented, and realtors will come constantly. We want to buy this apartment, and you can't do it. They all want to rent. They don't want to buy.
Resident of Eunice and then Leader Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, thank you for your work on this and for your presentation today. On page 14 of the packet of charts that you gave us, it has a baseline, an optimistic, and a pessimistic point of view, and it looks like in that chart those are percentages. So it looks like the optimistic view would be somewhere around a 3.5% to 4% increase.
Right.
A baseline would be
about where we are now, 2.5% thereabouts.
Okay.
And you notice in the pessimistic, they've got two consecutive quarters of a decline in GDP, although that is not a definition of a recession.
Mm-hmm. So that would be, the pessimistic would be about zero? Is that flat?
I think it comes out a little above that because the ups are a little stronger than the two downs. The two downs are like 1% or less.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking is, and you went through towards the end of this fiscal year how you've revised the FY16 total. I think it's down roughly $440 million from your original estimate. To
yes,
your revised,
yes.
And then the estimated 17 total is $32.8 billion. So that's that total compared to the revision of 16 is about $1.1 billion higher, which is about 3.5%.
You lost me there.
So I'm taking the difference, the estimated total for 17 compared to the revised total of 16.
It's growth of only, the $215 million represents growth of only 0.7%.
So is the estimated revenue number for 17 from CAGFA is
31,912.
That's where my confusion was. I was looking at on page 24.
Yeah, 24, we would consider our base estimate to be 31,912, and then if you were to add the 925 million of key GOMB assumptions of 925, then you would get to the 32,837, and that then would compare with their estimate of 32,818.
Okay. So your official estimate is 31,912.
31,912, yes.
Okay.
But we do want to recognize that there's some other items, should they choose to happen, you know, would of course change that baseline. But those are the things that we can't really put into our forecast because they would take legislative action or some other change that isn't considered true base revenues.
Understood. Thank you.
Leader Rose.
Thank you, Chairman Trotter. It's nice to be back in the House with my former seatmate, Representative Oons. On your diagrams, Ed, on the U6 diagram on page 12, on unemployment rates, just a quick question. Is the red, are we dealing in Illinois or national when in this chart?
That's national.
That's national. So the U6 is a national chart.
Yes.
And the unemployment rate beneath it would also be the part of the national chart.
Right.
Okay. on your Illinois forecast on 16, page 16, from FY16 to FY17, you got a pretty big jump in housing starts. What justifies that number? Where are you getting that data point? Is it just that supplies limited?
We just had a report on housing. Looks pretty darn good. Again, it pops up.
16.
Oh. Yeah, it goes from 18.9 to 25.2.
Yeah, I think
year
that,
over year.
That's a combination of continuing to look somewhat better. Mortgage rates are still going to be very, very low. What you're getting is a tremendous boom in rental units. Again, everybody wants to rent and not buy. Maybe they didn't see our latest increase in property taxes in Chicago, but I think that's reasonable. We're getting back fairly good private housing starts numbers.
Okay. Well, that's
in
a good sign.
In fact, there's a shortage of
there's
in
a
many
shortage
parts of the country,
yeah.
There's, and even in Illinois, there's a shortage of
okay, that's good.
Single-family homes.
Then you mentioned it a second ago, I think, Ed, about the out-migration of individuals from the state. Has anybody looked at the long-term dynamic there, not just from an income tax perspective, but also from a sales tax perspective? Because it strikes me as possible that you mentioned that gas prices are down and therefore people ought to be spending more money. And certainly it's a reasonable assumption to think that they're paying down debt or saving as opposed to spending, which accounts for the sales tax issue. But is it also as likely a reasonable position that people have left, so there's not as many people spending?
I think that when you look at the actual population numbers on page 16 there, they're essentially flat, maybe 0.1% decline in 15, flat in 16, up 0.1 in 17. I think it's pretty consistent. I mean, it's okay. We talk about out migration a lot, but that includes both the ins and the outs. When you get to the actual net population.
Has anybody ever done, and I'm not suggesting to know the answer to this because I don't, but has anybody ever done a deep dive to see who it is that's leaving and who it is that's coming in? Because one way of looking at this is if you had a lot of 40 to 60-year-olds leave, and that's made up with newborns, you could get to a net, you know, wash in terms of number of people, but your spenders have left. And you're going to be several years away from the younger ones getting to the point where they could spend anything, let alone get to the point where they're replacing the spending patterns of the 40 to 60-year-olds. Has anybody ever done that kind of a dive?
I don't know if any demographic studies at universities may have looked at something like that.
But I know that, you know, just from the census numbers that Illinois has been losing, that's why we lose representatives, because of
right.
the population. Another.
That's why I kind of question that, although to use what you just said brings in, it's vis-a-vis all the other states in America. So you can hold your own and other states grow and still lose. But I'd be interested to know who it is that's coming in and who it is that's going out.
I'll give you a little aside, which I've
sure.
noticed, because we have relatively older people in our building. It was built in 63, but we've had several residents, as they get closer to age, move to Florida for
right.
6 months and then come back. They'll leave their unit empty,
right?
You know, to avoid state tax, et cetera. Several of them have moved even out of our little building. To take advantage of the tax situation with the state tax, et cetera.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Burke.
Thanks. Can we go back to that U6 number and just help me
yeah.
understand how it moves in conjunction with the official unemployment rate? So the people who are counted in U6
12.
Are... people who want to work but they can't find a job, and then folks who work part-time but they'd really rather work full-time.
Right.
Okay. So how does it generally track if an economy improves and those folks are able to actually become fully functioning members of the workforce, does that mean that the official unemployment rate actually stays the same?
Let me start. The official unemployment rate is based on a survey. It's the workforce and the percent of the workforce that's unemployed. But if you're not looking for work because you don't think any exists,
right.
you're not in the labor force. Therefore, they have what they call the labor force participation rate. How much are participating in the labor force? And we're at the lowest level since 77 or 78 of people. Either they're not looking for jobs, they can't find them for economic reasons, they're working part-time but they'd like to have full-time. So I think what you really got to look at is how much of the population mm-hmm. is really in the labor force. The one number would be low, 4.9%, because the large share of people aren't even in the labor force, so they're not even being counted in the 4.9% national unemployment rate.
So I guess my question is, as an economy improves, that percentage of people who are in the labor force, or not in the labor force, however you're...
It could worsen the unemployment rate if they start coming back in. I mean, the official number might go up, even though you may be healthier.
Right, so you may have more people participating, but because they are not participating, it might juice up the
right.
unemployment
right.
rate. Okay.
But that would be a good sign.
Perversely, or it,
well,
it doesn't seem like it would be a good sign, but it is.
More people are in the labor force working,
right.
it's got to be good.
Okay, so the chart you've got on page 12, does this show that more people are participating in the labor force? As that red line goes down?
Well, the fact that it leveled off in the last month or so suggests that it's not worsening.
Okay. Perhaps not getting better at the moment, but not
right.
worsening. Okay.
All right. And it has been getting a little better over time. You know, we were, 15-16%
right.
during the recession. We're down to less than 10 now. So it is improving, but historically, it's still extremely, extremely out of whack.
Okay, so even this number today is high.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then if we could just go back to the discussions on growth. And it seems to me that what the Moody's report is saying is that they're projecting growth in Illinois' overall population. They think it's weak, or are projecting it to be weak. But they are, am I correct? They're projecting overall long-term growth in the population.
I think they had an increase in the out years of a little bit, if I recall. The population of Illinois was down, Moody's has 0.2% decline in 15. I'm looking at their out years.
No change in 16, 0.1 in 17, 0.1 in 18. It never gets above 0.1%
okay.
growth.
Okay, thanks.
Leader Neckritz and then Representative Davidsmeyer.
Just have one quick question, Mr. Mashinsky. Is there any way to quantify the impact of the budget stalemate on your revenue projections?
No, sorry.
Representative Davidsmeyer.
Back on this U6, so that's basically unemployed with the addition of underemployed, correct? Is that what that is?
I could give you
oversimplified.
The definition.
Oversimplified.
Right. It takes all kind of people who would like a full-time job but can't find it.
Sure.
And others who are taking part-time because of economic reasons or they're working two jobs.
So it could be somebody who's working full-time equivalent but just between two different jobs,
right.
But they're looking for a career, correct?
But if
you work, I'm not
that screws it up too because they got two different unemployment rates. Now if you're working two jobs and they're going to businesses, you're counted twice as being employed.
Yeah.
So you've got some of that coming in as the law changes, you have to work so many hours to be, and then the guy's got two jobs. Now all of a sudden in the establishment he's counted twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Co-Chairman Moffitt.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Trotter. And thank you for your for staff. Really good presentation. Just quick questions. Number one, how much has the ag sector revenue estimated to have changed? Do you have that isolated as anywhere? Do you track ag sector? Deere has announced some layoffs. We know those of us that are in production agriculture know that it's kind of tanked. Any estimate on how much we're losing there?
I don't really know.
We'll take a look and get back to you on that.
Okay. Just how significant it is. I'd appreciate that. Bottom line revenue estimates. I guess
they do have on exports here on page 16.
That'd be a factor, sure.
Their projection is that the agricultural product exports down 1%.
But exports are only part of it, of course,
right,
for the ag
right.
sector. If you could, you know, just rather than take time now, if you would,
sure.
How much have we lost in the ag sector is what I'm after. You know, maybe by year from 14, 15, 16, 17, whatever, make a comparison. Ag equipment sales have dropped, different things. So if we could quantify that. Bottom line revenue available in the general fund. You're saying use page 23, is that correct? Would be the, in comparing 16 and 17.
Right, the 31,912 would be what we consider base revenues without the other assumed revenues that were contained in the budget book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are the figures we really should be looking at unless there's additional revenue from some other source.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And then the Thompson Center has been mentioned here, and you've identified it. I believe it's $200 million. Do you consider $200 million an accurate? Is that a good figure to be using as potential revenue generated?
You know, it would have to go through the appraisal process, and that's beyond
okay.
our scope. I'm not certain as what the market value would be, but given location, size, and everything else, it doesn't appear to be an unreasonable number.
Mm-hmm. And whose estimate is that?
That'd be the administration's.
Okay.
It doesn't, on its face, it doesn't seem to be unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The timing of it may be what would be pretty aggressive to try to get it actually sold and that money in the general funds by the end of fiscal year 17.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we would say it's a little bit uncertain.
Okay, and then along with that, I was wondering, would we expect all of the... Is it reasonable to expect that if $200 million was the selling price, if it could be sold, we would get that all in one lump sum? I guess that would have to be negotiated. Is that,
right, I don't know.
How does that compare with other properties that have sold?
I don't know how that would be structured.
Okay.
I would assume we would press hard to get it as one lump sum.
Press hard to get it as one lump sum.
I would think that would mm-hmm. be the goal, is to get as much as we can up front, yes.
Okay. For now, that takes care of my questions. Co-chair?
Thank you. We have, I believe, one more question from Representative Burke.
Okay, my last question. Other than an unexpected increase or decrease in income tax receipts, you know, as people file their returns, are there any other events for FY16 that would cause you to revise anything that might happen that could cause you to revise your estimate either upward or downward?
Well, our next, if necessary, our next scheduled revision would be in early May. I would not be surprised if sales tax would have to continue to be revised down. I would not be surprised if federal sources, if it's clear that there's not going to be an infusion of either sweeps or interfund borrowing or regular short-term borrowing, if there's not an infusion of cash into the system, I wouldn't be surprised if that figure also would have to be revised down. Those would be the two areas I would.
So conversely, if there were an infusion of cash into the system for whatever source and that money was used to pay off Medicaid dollars or anything that brings in a matching money, it could cause you to revise your federal funds upward.
I would say that even with our revision, there is still considerable downward pressure. But we have so little to do with that spending, it's so difficult for us to estimate it. But that's why even with an infusion, I don't look for a tit-for-tat increase in the estimate. That may just be enough to get us where we are right now. Because appropriation levels, of cash available for spending, and ultimately the comptroller and what bills she pays and when she pays them determines how much reimbursement we're going to get. You know, we're nearing $2 billion in unpaid state group life or group insurance bills.
Right.
You know, you would think that you would give some priority to the reimbursable stuff because you get the, but you know, eventually those bills have to be paid too.
Right.
So if there is somehow an infusion of cash, who's to say where it will be directed? We just don't know.
Oh, exactly.
So what I'm saying is I could foresee downward pressure remaining on the federal source number as well as the sales tax number at this time.
Okay. Thanks.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much. I'm sure you're glad we adopted the stance a long time ago, don't shoot the messenger. But thank you for all the hard work that you do. Seeing there's no further business to come before this commission, we are adjourned.